This is going to make it interesting. What I have here is something Sam gifted me. This is an extra strength 20 milligram THC tablet. It's like a mint. So let's see how this goes. Can't open. I need scissors. There's scissors there, right? Yes. Amazing. Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
This is episode 159. I remembered that. We have quite a week this week. There were a lot of singles that came out, a lot of music that came out, a lot of albums that came out. It kind of just all happened at once. Mm-hmm. I kind of hate how that happens in the music world sometimes, but we have the best kind of overview of it that we can do. We have starting off with some singles from Idols, Neighborhood, ASAP Ferg, and New Order. We have album reviews from Sufjan Stevens, Fleet Foxes, and Deftones, and a lot of really wild news, almost enough for No Chill Island, but we'll see how far I make it until I get bleeped. Let's go right into the music, and we're going to start with a little bit of a curveball. Idols is something that I haven't been able to do in music recommendations yet, but they're a cool band. They're like a kind of a post-punk or like new punk English group. Pretty rad stuff. My friend Anderson told me about that group, and they released a new project called Ultramono. Just came out this week. Had no time to review it, but there are a lot of funny things. I think even the needle drop, Anthony Fantano got like in a Twitter like beef or like just pointed out and got like mad, not mad, whatever, about this one guy who was upset that Idols was making music that was political and like didn't understand it. It was like one of those Rage Against the Machine things. Like, since when did Rage Against the Machine get so political? It's such one of those, so dumb. Yeah. Model Village is another one of those really fun examples. It's like very light on the punk and rock stuff, but it's just sort of like painting this picture of a town that is all nice, that's like a utopia, but it's really not. It's like tried and true stuff that's gone on in music. That's pretty good, I think. See a lot happen in the village. Just give them an anthem and they'll sing it. Still they don't know the meanings in it. Just saluting flags cause it's British. Idiot spirits think they're kindred. Model low crime rate in the village. Model race, model hate, model village. It feels like the village is a pillage. Still someone's making a killing. Take flight, take flight.
I like it, it's fun.
Yes. Next is Silver Lining from the Neighborhood's Chip Chrome and Monotones. The album, the drop, it's like sub 30 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it's divided into two parts, nicely called Chip Chrome and the Monotones. And Chip Chrome is kind of a lot more electronic sounding.
Yes.
Very interesting. The single Pretty Boy came out from that. And it's a really nice song. It's a really nice second song to get into that. It'll be really nice to maybe in a court packing kind of sense
at this
point.
Definitely put in court packing.
Go into this album and go into it, because it's really interesting, especially as a drop. It's 31 minutes long. But the song I picked out from it is Silver Lining, because it's from that second part of the drop. That's very good. It wasn't released beforehand, so it's very interesting. It shows a different side of it. It's a lot less electronic. It's very more.
But what they've done before in their sound, but a little bit more updated and stuff, which is good. I've really liked and enjoyed the Neighborhood's work. They released an album about 2 years ago, so it's nice to hear this drop that has a lot of mixed stuff in the bag. It's different. There's a lot of different sounds that they've experimented with within the drop, and it was very good. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Next is ASAP Ferg. He released Floor Seats 2. Floor Seats 1 was the song that Plain Jane came off of, I'm pretty sure, and that's probably like ASAP Ferg's favorite song. So ASAP Ferg's best song. And so to get a second version or like a second outing of Floor Seats would be really cool. This one was, it took more of like a not quite Lil Uzi Vert, but very like techno electronic trap focus in this drop, which is kind of like an ASAP Ferg style. It's very like hard style electronic and trap thing. I like the second part more than the first, better than the first part. Like the original Floor Seats, it's kind of feature heavy. You get an opening roaring one with Marilyn Manson, which is kind of wild.
Which is wild, yeah.
Yeah, Tyga, which is a song called Dennis Rodman, also very wild. ASAP Ferg knows how to do it. But then you get some other weird things. There's like Movie Hips with noted interesting style, Nicki Minaj. And then Aussie Freaks, which is a really interesting one. But Hectic near the end is really cool. It almost sounds like a Run the Jewels song. Because it does flip half of the way in the middle.
Yeah, and it's a very political song. It gets in your face. It does feel like Run the Jewels in that way.
Yeah. It's good. Things, back to the basic, no diamond rings. Just you and God when the drama rings. Street clear, no sirens. It's a war going on, just stay clean. No Corona, just Heineken. Whatever happened to American dream? Whatever happened to the car life and the star life and the heaven it bring? When it all goes down, that's down the drain. But to the most high, he devour pain. All for a rapper to say these things, spray these things. If I'm in a Maybelline, then my lyrics heal the pandemic till it's finished. T-gut, let the angels sing. I
enjoyed it. I enjoyed some of that album as well. I think there's some interesting sounds that I'm seeing that trap is going more into. A lot of trap artists are now including more electronica and stuff in it, depending on the artist. And it's a good, it's decent.
I think music more broadly is spinning off into like an electronic, you're using electronic as the base core of your sound. Or using traditional instruments as a very base core of your sound. I think Latin music and a lot of European, Western music, and Eastern music falls under both of those categories, where sometimes they use more traditional sounds, sometimes they use more electronic things. Of course, everything gets touched by a computer at some point. There's a limit to how analog you can get it. But I do like that more embrace of, what are we talking about? Embrace of electronic and newer things that's going on. Which is interesting because our last new single is Be a Rebel by New Order.
Yeah, and it's interesting because they released, their last album was Music Complete a couple years ago. I remember they did Complete Music and Music Complete, which there was some really good songs on it, and there's some Uncle Rocky songs in there too, so it's kind of like a mixed bag. And this is like a blend between the two, between of like pushing kind of like their older sound forward a bit, but then still being held back a little bit by being Uncle Rocky in that regard, but it's actually a good single. I like the edit version a lot more than the full version, which is rare.
That's unusual for you.
That's usually very unusual for me, but I like it more because it cuts down some of the floof that's in there, but it's a decent song. If they're going to have a release a full project and what that's going to sound like. But I mean, it sounds like basically futuristic 80s song, more or less.
It sounds very much almost like
Be a Rebel. Be a rebel, not a devil.
A devil. Be a Rebel, not a devil. Yeah. It sounds, has almost that very much like two-step beat, like What Is Love by Hathaway.
And they've done a lot of songs like that back in the past, too.
Yeah, of course. Wasn't this supposed to be, or Music Complete supposed to be New Order's last album?
I don't know if that was supposed to be their last or not. I don't remember.
I thought like there was a long time between that one and the other ones there. It's kind of like, that's it. But I don't know. We will find out. I would not be mad with doing another New Order album.
Mm-hmm.
They're a really good band. Anyways, promotions, stuff. That is the singles. That is the singles. Please, music world, just release them over a more calm thing. Like, every couple weeks, don't give us like complete dry desert weeks, like 3 weeks out of the month, and then like
and then
1 week
like
where it's just like everything. Pumping music into our dead bodies. Please stop. But non-music related politics stuff, make sure you check out Power Report. There's a really dope episode about what to do within this moment as an individual person. Check out the Power Report feed at powerreport.world and all the episodes for that at danfromtheinner.net. On the AudioFace side of things, make sure you're checking out our social media, twitter.com/AudioFace and twitter.com/AudioFacePod and instagram.com/AudioFacePod. We're going to be posting more there soon. And it should be a pretty interesting month coming up. I think the next week alone, there's YG, Future Islands, and Yonsei.
Yeah, which is like, So random.
That's going to be a wild card week. And of course, in October, there's Sam Smith, there's Biba Doobie, there's Gorillaz. There's going to be a lot coming in October.
October's going to be...
October is always a fun month.
It's a lot of music that month, yeah.
Yes, make sure you're subscribed to Audio Face and you are looking at us at all the platforms that we're on so you don't miss anything. Let's get into the music news of the week and... oh my god.
Tory Lanez just shot himself in the foot. figuratively, not literally.
Sean, you're on rare form. That was really good. That was damn good. Okay, fuck, I almost want to let you host the show now. But Tory Lanez, fuck, how do I even intro such a story? So we all know the thing about Tory Lanez. We all know the thing about Tory Lanez and Meg Thee Stallion. It seems that Meg Thee Stallion is saying everything but, well, is saying that Tory Lanez shot her in the foot. Didn't escalate at the time because of getting the police involved. It'd be kind of messy, yada, yada, yada. But it's pretty clear what happened. Everyone has admitted it, but Tory Lanez, who has released the 2020 musical equivalent of O.J. Simpson's book, If I Did It. It's an album that Tory Lanez...
Bullet fits, you must acquit.
Whoa. I mean, more on that later. the album is called Daystar, and... Oh, God.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
After disappearing from social media following the arrest and the shooting, I'm following Ben K's reporting and consequence of sound. He kind of broke his silence by releasing the cover on Instagram saying, there's a time to stay silent and a time to speak. I said all I could say on this, releasing Daystar. It's available on SoundCloud for some god-awful reason. I'm just going to read a couple of excerpts here. Mm-hmm. This is a couple of bars from the opening song Money Over Fallouts, which I might want to even edit in here. I gotta see a couple questions. How the fuck you get shot in your foot? Don't hit no bones of tennis. How the fuck your team is trying to pay me at some whole minutes? I just lost like $10 million because it's cold business. But I got like 10 million followers that's gonna roll with me. Fans that support me because they know my heart. So I don't give a damn. Gotta see a couple questions. How the fuck you get shot in your foot? Don't hit no bones or tendons. How the fuck your team is trying to pay me with some whole millions? I just lost $10 million because of this cold business, but I got 10 million followers, so that's going to roll with me.
So you're concerned about money over a person's well-being?
Okay. No, money and followers.
Money and followers over someone else's well-being.
To be fair.
Yes, to be fair.
To be fair. So, yeah, he's saying that people are trying to pay... her off or him off or whatever, and that Meg is lying and all this other stuff. It believe it or not, it gets better / worse.
Yep.
It continues and goes, and I thought you was solid too, but look at how you doing me. Look at how you doing me. People trying to ruin me. And what's even worse is I'm still trying to think about you and me. How you going living my birthday with all your jewelry, making some fool of me. But I love you so hard and I'm cool with it. Because I was cool and right with Cuban B, but that was stupid me. Somehow I'm stupid to negotiate the unity. My heart is fooleries. This shit confusing me. It's like, you are making it so hard for me to love you, person I shot in the foot.
So I'm going to go ahead and nominate Tory Lanez for the Not a Little Bitch Award. Just for that line. Just for that. Because you can't go around shooting Meg Thee Stallion in the foot. And then going around going to song. Yelling at her, calling her a liar and all that shit, and then going back and say, wait, no, but take me back, baby, like, I need your love, and I'm so loved, I'm so confused. It's just...
It's...
You're a little
fucking ridiculous, dude. Like, needless to say, the ridiculous amount of misogyny that goes into that, like, mm-hmm. You are... I'm making the jokes of, like, the typical tropes of someone who is, like, grooming someone for an abusive relationship, saying things that, oh, it's not... my fault I'm being mean to you. It's your fault you're provoking me to be mean to you. It's like this weird sort of reverse psychology thing that Tory Lanez was probably doing in the relationship to some extent, because mm-hmm. This is how a lot of rappers have this like persona to behave. They say it in their music, sometimes it's written off as parody, but a lot of times it's not. In reality, and Tory Lanez was just fucking dumb enough to make it an album. Like, release the fucker out.
I just... Oh, man.
There's a part, Sorry I Had To, which is a song later on there, where he goes to say, and Chris Brown, a black man that changed his life for the right, and still black Twitter finding ways to tear him down, bring him back in, a rapper catch a domestic, y'all start to talk that action. So he's saying that people start yapping their mouths when other rappers start beating their girlfriends. So let's just not talk about that. Let's just not talk about that.
This definitely deserved Noted Little Bitch nomination.
This is hard R.
He gets two nominations, right?
Holy shit. Yeah, this is some record breaking.
This is the You Fucked Up album. So he clicks like post. He's like, this at this moment, he knew he fucked up. It's just the amount of stupidity that went on in that entire album was hilarious because all the people around him are probably like, yeah, dog, it's good, dog. Like, put it out. It's just,
yeah, man. Yeah, man. Fuck her, man. Yeah, yeah. It was like, what kind of dumb... Oh, my God.
Bleep, 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 bleep. I know what's going on in your brain.
No, no. Someone's putting ricin in the lean is all I'm saying. They just need to... Maybe they should let him drink it or something.
Put some honey in a cup.
But, like, it just makes no fucking sense. And now we move on to a lighter topic. Not at all. We've always talked about Slim Jimmy. What the fuck is going on with Slim Jimmy, the other half of rap duo Ray Schreiber?
Now we know.
Because Shuai Lee's doing all these other bits. He's always preparing on songs and singing, even though he's complete garbage. Slim Jimmy is basically the same mediocrity of Shuai Lee, but as a rapper. So, like, combined, they're not that bad, but, like, apart, they're pretty
horrible.
Garbage.
Yeah.
Ray Schreiber's Slim Jimmy has officially split from his pregnant girlfriend after allegedly knocking her teeth out.
So that's what he's been up to.
Yeah, so,
instead of free Slim Jimmy, let's arrest Slim Jimmy.
Shuai Lee's making beach, Slim Jimmy's, so, according to modern TMZ, The Shade Room, Akil Ibn Shimon Brown, a.k.a. Slim Jimmy, allegedly punched Key in the mouth, knocking out her front tooth, and also hitting her so hard that one of the bones above her gum was also injured. According to an x-ray, there are photos and text messages that aren't in the article, but also say where, like, Slim Jimmy does the, I'm sorry, I didn't know I hit you that hard. Which is also just like, this is just like, you're making it so good for the lawyers, by the way.
Oh, man. I didn't know I was going to hit you that hard. And lawyers be like, he did it.
But, like, there's that RDC World video where, like, one guy's pretending to be the lawyer and the other guy's the guy who got in trouble. And they're like, how they catch you in 4K?
Got the P tape right here.
Oh, my God. Yo. I mean, this is a general thing. We talked about this previously earlier in the story with Tory Lanez, but rappers, chill out. Stop. Take a breather.
Chill.
There's something to be said about the rampant misogyny and rap music, and, like, sometimes it's just like, yeah, just said, it's whatever, it's a thing, it's already there, but, like, the line between what is just parody of it and what is real is constantly getting thinner and thinner with, like, these stories that are coming out, let alone the stories that don't make it out on news articles all the time, so it's definitely something to consider. That was dark.
Yeah, you know, just be Killer Mike or Kendrick Lamar and just chill.
I mean, like, we don't know. Like, there might be some stuff about them now. But, like, it's you have a standard that doesn't necessarily apply to a person. Those two rappers, at least for the time being.
And how many stories have we done this year?
Yeah. They seem to fall out of that. And it's just incredibly easy to not abuse people and be a shitty person and make good music at the same time. It's amazing that more people don't do it. And we have Sufjan Stevens' The Ascension. It is long. It is 1 hour and 20 minutes long and 15 songs. Sufjan Stevens is an incredibly interesting person. Electro pop, I guess you could say, safely in that genre.
Yeah, that's what I would say it is.
Yeah, not necessarily experimental, but definitely one to make concept albums. There's, like, a couple of concept albums based off of different parts of America. There's Illinois, there's Michigan. There's a bunch of whole random concerto-like pieces with all these different parts within them. He does a lot of stuff. He's a very interesting guy. This latest piece, The Ascension, is I'm gonna put all my cards out there. Kind of a masterpiece. It's kind of amazing to me.
It's a lot, there's a lot to listen to. As I said, John Aguirre says, there's a lot in this album. The only thing I love throughout the album, I really like the musicality and the production is just clean and crisp. I'm gonna jump a little bit ahead because the later half of the album, there's a lot of like garage influences in there and like really like some old school like 90s UK garage in there mixed with some electro pop, which you really don't hear that often, or if you do, it's a hot mess, but it's not here. I don't even know where to begin. There's a lot of crap in this, but it's good crap, which is nice to say. My only one critique is I hate the vocal theme where it's just high pitched the entire time and very airy. It gets annoying after a while, but I know that's what he does.
I think it's a here there thing, because
it is.
It's in that time, the combination with the light, airy, pitched, like audio affected, edited vocals combined with the sort of really glitchy experimental electronic pop music was very reminiscent of Radiohead. There are very many times, in fact, kind of early on where I felt like, oh, this is almost an Idiotech clone.
Well, there's a couple of tracks, that's what I like by the latter half, like Landslide, Death Star, where those where I really like the vocals in there because it fit way more into the musicality in the second half than the first half. Maybe it started off because the first two songs, Make Me an Offer, Can't Not Refuse, and Run Away With Me, were really vocal prevalent, and I'm like, okay, it's... It's okay to have like once or twice the album, but not to have throughout the whole thing with having just the high-pitched raspiness of a vocals. But within the latter half, it was ended up doing a lot better in that regard. Because, you know, it's like when we say with 21, we don't want him to do the whisper thing all the time.
Yeah.
It's cool to have in a couple of songs, we don't want it all the time. But again, in the latter half, it changed a little bit within how it worked with the production. But anyways.
That's an excellent comparison.
I really enjoyed it. There's a lot of airiness into it, but there's a lot of crazy drums in this album, where there's a lot of electro drums in it. There's a lot of normal percussion drums that are mixed with electro drums at the same time. So it's a lot of different beats, a lot of different measures, a lot of different time signatures in there as well. So it's a lot happening.
Yeah. God. Yeah. You mentioned Runaway With Me, and that was kind of a weird in the middle. Video Game is that part where like it starts to get almost Idiotech-y. And
Video Game, you could definitely hear like Idiotech thing.
Actually, I would say even more than that, Lamentations. Because of the weird drumming and the segmented voices kind of playing around. That's kind of where I was getting to what you were saying.
And Lamentations is my second favorite on the album. Landslide is my favorite song on the album, Lamentations is second. And I really enjoy it. That's when I started to start to understand a little bit more and get into it. There's a lot of music in there. It's really long. Especially the last song, I think, is what, like, they switched between Cigarettes and put 12 and a half minute song for the last track.
The last couple songs are pretty long. Like Sugar, The Ascension's 5 minutes, but it's like relatively long.
Yeah.
Broadly for a song. But like Sugar and America Broke both are over 6 minutes, like America is very long. But that's, I think, one of Sufjan Stevens' benefits that especially like tees him up well for the way we critique albums on Audioface, is his albums are always very complete works. They're ideas that have like a start and an end and a concept and a lot of meaning. And he's really good at kind of giving you all of that there, while sometimes being a little bit on the nose. At least he has that kind of consideration for having a complete idea in an album that you don't really get all the time.
It's very, it's cool because every song is cohesive, even though there's a lot of differences between each song. That, you know how I like to do the thing where I put albums on shuffle and see if they still work, and it definitely does, where there's a lot of different sounds in it, but you can still sounds like a complete work.
Yeah.
Which is, again, rare to do and very, very hard, especially when you have an album, a pop electronica album that is so diverse in it. So it's not just like your standard electronic album, there's so many different concepts that you're putting into it.
But yeah, this is substantially good. More experimental, I would say, than even most like electro pop tends to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's even more experimental than a lot of Sufjan Stevens going in there. There are a lot of memes. A lot of Sufjan Stevens' music has been before. There were a lot of memes that were even pointing out like people who had listened to other songs of his before, listening to this for the first time, and they're just like dumbfounded because it's just, it's so very different. It's quite a leap. I think it does a lot well. And I haven't gone to the play this album through shuffle yet point, but I listened to this like 2.5 times, and all the way it's just like going straight through in the orders. And it plays through really nicely. In between Lamentations, you have Tell Me You Love Me and Die Happy to kind of slow things down.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have my favorite song of the album, which is also like begins, I think, the second part, which is a really nice aspect of the album, which is Ativan. Is it all for nothing? Is it all part of a plan? Tranquilize me and revise me. And the song itself has an kind of interesting build-up to the beginning, and then does that same sort of like conventional drums, traditional drums, sort of synthesizing
together. And it's just like, yeah, just like all the drums are just going mental by the end of that track. I remember listening to that. Where like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's almost even reminiscent of Tycho sometimes. It's a very nice range.
Yeah, I could say like if Tycho took a little more drugs.
Yes. A little more drugs, but not the like rave kind, the kind that would only make you sit in your room. Maybe more like acid specific.
Like,
shrooms. Absolutely shrooms.
Tycho on shrooms, that's what we call this album.
And Tycho on shrooms, absolutely. You have more to talk about with like Ursa Major and Landslide and stuff, right?
Yeah, well, because that's when I really, really got into this album, especially with Landslide, because that was the first track where I listened to that song a couple of times when I got to it, because I very enjoyed it. That's when I started to understand the vocals more, where it was starting to be more prevalent, but it wasn't necessarily just stuck in that high, raspy part. It was now within the musicality of the song itself. Was doing where it's, I wouldn't say it's more conventional song, but it's more approachable. But then I could hear all the little beats. There's like a little chime beat in the background, little like bloops and dashes that I like to call when you're messing around experimenting with electronics, and it's very, very good. You have Gilgamesh right afterwards, which is a little bit slower at the beginning, and then does like almost like a Sophie style towards the end, where it just like cuts in and out with the drums and stuff, which is a cool concept in it, because it's not like too ear fuckery, but it's still good to where you can get into it. And then Death Star right after that, it's like straight up almost like an industrial garage style track mixed with like pop synthesis, and it's very good. Synthesizer, like a thing, but anyways, it's good.
Photosynthesis. Yeah, the ending is, like the rest of the album, a bit much. Like the three songs, Sugar Ascension.
Yeah, I think America was just a bit overdone for the ending track.
Absolutely.
I mean, I enjoyed it, but it's...
I enjoyed the first half.
Yeah, and the second half just kind of droned on, because there's only there's maybe two bands or two groups who can put out long songs, and Sigur's is one of them, where like it's like a whole complete song for 13 minutes, and it's very hard to do that and keep you enthralled into a track.
Yeah.
Because America, for the if he cut it a little bit shorter, I think it would have been landed a little bit better. But that landed was like, I'm going to use the whole runway. ATC says I can use the whole runway, I'm going to use the whole runway. And that's what it was.
Yeah. So. The highest form of art and composition is almost like what it gets back to in everything is just restraint and knowing when to... cut back a piece from making it too long, and how to fill a piece within a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. It could have been a very meaningful, like, I was sort of expecting and wanting Sugar and Ascension to like lean in each other and be this really nice last song. And then America, because it was a single and it's like not all that different, but still kind of related to the rest of the album, could be this broader kind of focal point, maybe like some kind of slight message within there. I like the line, the refrain, "Don't do to me what you did to America," is kind of clever, mm-hmm. but also doesn't like, isn't elaborated on that much more, but it's still like kind of cool and rides that line of being a little too hitting you over the head with the meaning. But yeah, if it were just like a shorter 5 or 6 minute song as a statement, it would have made more sense. It almost has the, as we were talking off camera earlier, the 1975 curse of like being a little bit too long for its own good, but still having like quite many good, genius moments within it.
For sure. That's the only thing that's really dragging it back was that. But you want to go to Arbitrary Scale?
Yes, Arbitrary Scale this week is NBA teams that have made it to fewer finals than LeBron James. LeBron James has made it to, I believe, 10 NBA finals now, with the Lakers being his 10th. And that's more than several entire NBA franchises. So we've done a lot of NBA franchise arbitrary scales, but this one is a little bit more specific and on a certain more like scale on its own. And because we haven't mentioned this in a couple dozen episodes, I'll just reiterate it. Audioface reviews every single album with an arbitrary scale because we believe all music reviews are arbitrary except for the words that are actually expressed in said review. Thereby reducing them to scores or numbers is just going to create some necessary arbitrary argument, thus we call it the arbitrary scale. Sean, are you done wiki-wikiing on your iPad? Have you found a
shit team? Yeah, I'm gonna put this as a Denver Nuggets.
Where are the Denver Nuggets? That depends. They may have actually. They have not. They absolutely have not.
I would be shocked if they had. It's just because that's one of my favorite cities is Denver. I spent a lot of time there. I do enjoy it, but their basketball team is not that good.
Yeah, not great. It might be.
Except they have those really. They do have those on there. Nice. They have those really cool rainbow jerseys.
Those are the limited edition ones. They wear them sometimes, but they are really nice.
Those ones are sweet, and I wish.
Might be the oxygen. Might be the Bears outplaying them in pickup games out in the field, but like.
Or it might be the Colorado Avalanche actually winning championships too. You know.
I don't know. Something or the other. The mojo is just not there for basketball.
That's ironic. I am wearing an Avalanche shirt.
Amazing. I'm gonna give this ye olde Memphis Grizzlies.
Hey, there it is.
Yeah. Why does Memphis have a basketball? Why does Memphis have a basketball team? There's not much to say about
them. This is pretty shitty city.
Why it's the
like, I'm sorry
scale.
If you're listening to this from Memphis, but my uncle lives there and he freaking hates it.
He's leaving there actively. A lot of people are talking about like the California coastal New York exit, but like also people leaving Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
Going to exotic locales such as Cleveland.
Cleveland!
Yes. Kamala Harris, our future cop in chief, has been actually railed again, or like on Twitter, for making a mistake verbally on rap music, which keeps happening. She was asked what, like, in a, like a CNN panel or something, just like in joke and fun, because these are the moments we have to try to make these absolute political ghouls seem human. She was asked, what do you think is the best rapper alive? To which Kamala Harris responds, Tupac.
He's been dead since I've been alive. Since we've been alive.
Yeah, that's kind of the ripperoni
when you get,
rough
when
thing
you get
about
shot,
it.
96, 97.
Early 96. So, like, yeah, it might have been, like, me being, like, just about to be born, very early, like, zygote status.
Mm-hmm.
It's
rough.
Kamala Harris has also had a lot of these issues with, like, rap music, pretending to be a poser. She's had a lot of these issues, seeming to be a poser with, like, being a stoner and all that stuff. So
remember when she wore Tim's like last week and all the liberals were like, oh my god, she's wearing Tim's.
It's like, oh, cool. I can't wait for her to crush the skulls of people she disagrees with in her Tim's.
Anyways.
Can you see how jaded I am, y'all? Is this like too much? Is this all done?
I'm
gonna dial it down a little bit.
All right, so moving on to Run the Jewels.
Speaking of Run the Jewels, they're gonna be performing Run the Jewels 4 in person for the first time, as part of the Adult Swim Voter Registration Concert on October 10th. It's a really hot album, one of the hottest rap albums of the year, and this is the first time they get to perform it. They've had relationships with Adult Swim in the past, so this makes sense that they would do it.
And it'll be streamed online and live TV.
Holy Calama Vote and play on one of the Run the Jewel 4 songs. Replace Vote with another four-letter word and you'll get there. But yeah, it makes total sense for it to be like a vote-a-thon of some way. Ben and Jerry's is sponsoring the show, and...
Noted socialists, Ben and Jerry's.
Noted capitalist socialists, Ben and Jerry's. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how they're going to try to motivate people to vote other than having like a information to vote on the same page the live stream is at.
That's
or whatever.
The only thing I assume.
Yeah, I guess that can do Woo-hoo. It. That's good. Fine. Awesome. Better than nothing, but of course voting is not enough. Do more than that. There's a Power Report episode that just came out related to that. And if nothing else, don't listen to me doing all these plugs and all this talking and freewheeling. Killer Mike would agree with me. He would deadass agree with me. His whole thing about strategizing, mobilizing, organizing, mm-hmm. planning, and stuff like that. Killer Mike was a community organizer before he was a trapper and before he was a rapper. So, like, all those things are very relevant to the story. This is amazing. You were reading this earlier, right? Cardi B and her sister are being... hit with a defamation lawsuit after they were on a trip somewhere in Florida, right?
I think they were in, in Long Island.
Long Island, so New York. Very much they're not Florida, but Long Island is the Florida of New York. Basically, they spotted someone sporting a MAGA hat, called them racist, yada, yada, yada. The person got very not upset and very not triggered by a noted liberal, Cardi B, and her words, not doing anything. And so decided to cry all the way to his lawyer. After sharing the footage, Cardi tweeted out, "My sister can't go to the beach in the Hamptons without Trump supporters harassing because they're by themselves and Santa Claus was harassing my sister's girlfriend because they're an Afro-Hispanic gay couple."
Yeah, so I guess what happened, so Cardi B's sister had everything on video. And it was, I guess they were speaking Spanish, her and her girlfriend, and they're out and some altercation happened, don't know who started it or whatnot, and then there was, you know, some yelling, some shit going, thrown out between the two parties, and naturally the people wearing MAGA hats were all offended and stuff. The people who were saying, "Oh, don't get offended."
Yeah.
The irony.
Very funny. Love to see it. Love to watch. Shores by Fleet Foxes is our next album. Let's go into that.
So it is 15 songs, 54 minutes long, and Fleet Foxes are one of my favorite bands. I'm not one who likes folk. I'm not one who really likes that Mumford & Sons style of music, except for Fleet Foxes, because they're the only ones who can do it right. Father John Misty also does it right, but he was a member of Fleet Foxes for about 4 or 5 years. He did the first two albums. And I think their last album was done a few years ago, Crack Up, which is 2017, which had a lot of different sounds in there, a lot more like airiness and stuff. And there was some very good tracks in it. The other ones are kind of forgettable. So when they released that, I was a little disappointed in some of it. But this album, top to bottom, is fucking really good. It's probably their most complete work since their self-titled debut album. Because Fleet Foxes have an interesting thing where they're from Seattle, and they like make this folksy style music, but it's more like Americana folksy without being pretentious or trying to be pretenders. They're like really live that style of life and everything. And the lead vocalist, I can't think of his name, I can see his face, has an amazing voice and loves to use it. And he actually was quoted earlier this week that when they did the surprise album, that he said, "You can fake guitar solos, but you cannot fake having a good voice," which I think is very prevalent, especially in their music, because there's like guitars, there's percussion, everything like kind of normal instruments, but they make it sound like a whole group. They make it sound unison and very together, and there's no one person or one band member outshining the other. It's a whole conglomerate of people joining up.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Singer-songwriter Robin Pecknold.
Pecknold, there we go. I was like, peck something.
Yeah.
Anyways, it starts with Waiting in Waist High Water, which is kind of a slow 2-minute opener track into it. And then it gets into Sunblind, which is, oh my God, I really, really enjoyed this track.
I'm happy as white. If this is flat,
listened to it a couple of times, where it's like this really good alternative Americana-ish song. Lana Del Rey, this is how you fucking make an Americana album. And it's just, you feel like it's a really good, like you're chilling, like literally walking down the ocean, or you're chilling on a long drive or something, yeah. Top down. Perfect song for that.
You feel the emotion within the chords and the strumming, yeah. Which carries out within the percussion. And like you're saying, every aspect of it, including the vocals, come together to provide that effect and provide mm-hmm. that sound, which goes into what was being said earlier about how you can't really fake that. You really have to craft
you have to craft that
yeah. and put it together. Down Believe after Can I Believe You is Jara, which Jars. I think is a really, really, really nice ballad.
I love the guitar work in Jara. So that's one something that they experimented a little bit more with this album, because usually their guitars are really like just undertones and just normal, like just kind of strumming the background, little things, except like Sun It Rises on their first album. But for Jara, you can hear it in the background where it's like little guitars looping a little bit more. It's a little more prevalent into it, but it's not outshining anything. And there's a little cool vocal effect throughout the thing too. But it's a very, it is a ballad. I could see that. It's good. And then after Jara, it goes into Featherweight, which is like this more Aries song, which is what they're kind of known for in their regard. So their first four songs are definitely different than what they've done before, for sure. It's way more, it's not fast-paced, but it's fast-paced for Fleet Foxes.
I feel like it's necessarily like a little fast-paced for Fleet Foxes, but also has punchier percussion. And it's like a little bit almost like louder almost way to make it more distinct.
After Featherweight, you get to A Long Way Into the Past, which I really like the instruments.
A Long Way Past the Past.
Oh, sorry, A Long Way Past the Past, if I could not have dyslexia.
No worries. We should just do, like, vocally speaking exercises, like they do right before stage acting.
Yeah, it'd be like great. If we get some sponsors for Audioface, you know, go Squarespace or some random shit, then sure.
Yeah, donate to our Patreon so we can get a vocal coach dedicated to Audioface. That's our priority. Not social media, not editing. We'll definitely get a vocal coach.
Oh, Lord. Anyways, after you have 4 weeks or two, which is a decent sign, you get into Maestranza. I don't know how to say this.
Yeah, Maestranza, something like that.
This is where Peckinholt's voice shines. Where you finally get to hear, like, because Fleet Foxes, usually his voice like is pretty prevalent in it, but for the first half of the album it's not at all. But that was the first song where it's like boom in your voice, and it is gorgeous song. Really like it. Top to bottom, just beautiful, where you have it out, the guitar, the drums, everything. It's just fantastic. Again, this is something that I'm very glad with that Fleet Foxes have done, because usually a lot of their songs, some of it can be filler-ish stuff where a lot of it's just like really airy and lucid style of music, but this, from top to bottom, it's way more substance into it. Each song has a meaning. There's nothing that's skipped. There's nothing that's filler at all within the album, which is good. After that, you got Young Man's Game, which is now you have three vocalists all together doing in harmony and
wow,
unison,
I didn't even know
and
that.
It is very, very good. Right after Maestranza too. It's good. Yeah.
Quiet Air, Giulia, is a little bit down after that, and I really love the transition that goes within that. It reminds me of one of my favorite transitions next to, I think it's, there's this transition on Cosmogramma by Flying Lotus that's like Do the Astral Plane or something like that. That's okay. Also just a very pleasing transition. The songs are completely different. I'm not comparing the songs by any means, but it just really goes in together where you have like a really kind of hype beginning first part, and then the second part is chiller, but somehow keeps that pace. And yeah, you just get the best of it. It transcends Americana and folk at that point. It seems like you're using those building blocks and you're using those tools, but it's something bigger. It's something a lot more, not that folklore Americana is bad. We're very clear that we're just like not necessarily favorable to these certain genres in a general sense. Yeah. But it just adds a lot more variety and
more
flavor
substance.
To this. Yes, adds substance.
And,
that's,
and it almost feels like early Coldplay style, where it's like, or like Weird Fishes almost, where it just keeps building and building and building, stops, and then builds back right back up. That's with Quiet Air. It's awesome. Going to the Sun Road right after that, that's when it, like, the album will slow down a little bit right there. But it's not a bad thing because it experiments a little bit with some like electronica stuff in there, which I've never heard them use before at all, but it's not out of place.
Yeah.
And it has like a female vocalist in the background going on kind of towards the end, and you have some other things that go on to where I'm like, well, they actually started to experiment a little bit there, which is awesome too. After that, you have Thymia, which is just, that's Old Fleet Foxes for sure. That's like their first album where it's just short 2 minutes, really slow, and just vocals and a little bit of guitar work, which is cool, a little bit of a callback into it, but it doesn't seem out of place, which is good. Because you can easily, you know, put something older-ish sounding into an album and then just be like, eh, it doesn't fit within there, but it does. And the last two songs, Creating Mother, Creating the Woman, is good. It kind of goes back and forth between slowing down, speeding up, slowing down, speeding up, and then Shore has beautiful piano in the beginning. Yeah. Really like it as an ending track. This is definitely Fleet Fox's most complete work. It is one of my favorite albums so far of the year. It's very, very good. I'm surprised though. I actually didn't expect this from them. I thought that they were gonna do more of their stuff where they're almost like Tori Amos, where Tori Amos, I'll like half the album. Half the album is amazing. The other half is kind of wishy-washy, which is a lot of stuff. That's my one issue I have with Fuckboy Amos, I like to call him. But with this for Fleet Fox, it's just top to bottom. Every song works. Everything is, there's no filler at all. You can, again, put it into shuffle and it still is cohesive, which is extremely hard to do, and it's a great album.
Yeah, I think the part where you're getting at the end where a song speeds up, a song slows down, a song speeds up, a song slows down, especially for something like Fleet Foxes, where you're based in such a kind of genre that plays a lot with speed for the really setting the tone of what the song is going to be like, and really for one of the few ways to differentiate some of the songs.
Yes.
I think they should have gone in for a smoother landing, that kind of up-down kind of thing, made an otherwise generally cohesive album feel like it stuttered near the end, and ruined what otherwise could have been just like one of those phenomenal endings that I just like put up on a pedestal as an award somewhere. The endings are fine. They kind of like sort of, I guess if I could metaphorically describe this album, it's the waves' behavior at a day at the beach. You have
That's a good explanation.
It begins with the tide coming in and the water coming in and the waves kind of doing their daily sort of machinations and stuff like that. And then once the day sort of ends, it sort of percolates out. Mm-hmm. And so you do get that explanation for tide goes in, tide goes out. You can't explain that. But I think that really does get the metaphor of shore, even if not fully in the lyrics and the music and the sound. Maybe it's supposed to give you that visceral feeling of being at the beach, which I'm totally vibing with. I totally like it. It's even more of like an autumnal beach cover, it seems, like a late summer fall. So nice coming out. I'm not necessarily super partial to Fleet Foxes or like them particularly that much or seek them out. This is a pretty solid album, I'd say. Very good. If you say it's like one of their better ones that feels most cohesive to the project of Fleet Foxes, I would definitely believe you and I would definitely understand you with that. And I'd love for them to continue learning and crafting off of that, maybe take a break and also play with some of the more experimental things. Be like The Neighborhood and release some random, like, 20-minute experimental shit. Just, like, have some fun. But it's a very hard thing to have the kind of discography that you do with Fleet Foxes, where you're, like, not old, but you're, like, now in that middle age kind of a band, usually 10 to 15 years.
And this is where, like, their sweet spot hits right now, too, because they've had... Three of their members have been together for like 20 plus years or so. They've been together forever. And they actually took some breaks when Robin Peckenhold went to finish his music degree. So they took some breaks. That's when Father John Misty left the band and then started his own solo project. And when he left, that's when I didn't really like their latest album that much, because I thought he was like one of the biggest parts, because you could also hear his voice and they would go back and forth. But then this to me is like, wow, okay, they came back and just really nailed it out of the park. So
that's awesome. Love it. Arbitrary scale this week, as we often, or actually no, this is the arbitrary scale we changed every week, so not very often. But we are looking to sports, as we sometimes do, and we are looking to teams. And so these are just the worst performing teams in the NBA who have gotten, as a franchise, fewer points on the board than LeBron James. As far as finals go,
this is the Toronto Raptors, because they just won a final, but they've barely been to the finals, and Canada finally got a ship randomly. Yeah. You know, they got a ship, the NBA got a ship more recently than a Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup. And will for a long time.
So Canada won in the NBA faster than they won in hockey.
Yeah, for a long, yeah, because they haven't won a last team to win a Stanley Cup in Canada was in the 90s.
That's pretty wild.
The Montreal Canadiens when Patrick Roy left and said, I'm never playing for you again.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
I'm going with the Washington Wizards. The Gizzards, they seem to be
the Gizzards.
they seem to always have like team names after them. You don't have to call them the Washington basketball team, so at least that's a start. But they don't win shit. That's the problem. They're in movies. They have like Magic Johnson and all the stories.
That's
but
right.
Like, you don't win shit.
So you can only use so much when you don't win shit.
Like, yeah. It's DC. DC should have a good basketball team. I totally love the political sport to have where basketball in DC instead of baseball, because then you wouldn't have like people like Baseball Crank on Twitter. But then again, that's great content to make fun of, so at least there's that. But baseball is such a boring like political sport in that way, where like, of course, the people who are like number crunchers really would love to see like the analytical sort of like slower moving aspect of baseball. But basketball would be...
I mean, they have a fantastic hockey team. DC. Well, the Capitals won 2 years ago. Fuck Capitals, but like they're a great team.
Entertaining hockey to watch.
It's very entertaining hockey to watch. Fuck them, but yeah. At least they win shit.
Fuck them. Yes. Want to go straight through and some more interesting news. So
yeah,
Kodak. I love the fader. Kodak Black is claiming an interesting thing. So because he is in prison right now, and he's been moved from a couple of different prisons, he's reportedly gotten into some fights, but there's interesting stuff seeming to be happening all around. But he's launching a lawsuit against the Federal Bureau of Prisons and the warden of Big Sandy, which is the high-security prison in Kentucky he is in currently. He claims to have suffered routine physical and emotional abuse at the hands of the authorities, being restrained 6 hours without going to the bathroom. He shit on himself and the guards laughed. He was beat in the head with a metal object. One of his wardens flicked his genitals and said, "You're not the gangster now."
that's a power move. But as Ali Sadiq, one of my favorite comedians, Ali Sadiq's like, I'm gonna have to kill him. Who was it? I can't think of the sketch where Mitchell. It's like, Mitchell, this ain't gonna be good.
Yeah.
So I am not surprised whatsoever by what's gone on in prison, because this is well documented through many, many people that prison guards are some of the worst of the worst.
Yeah, and like that's the thing is, like, we say we have this legal system, and we say part of the legal system is throwing these criminals to this box somewhere. This box being the criminal justice system and all these prisons that are private and public that are around the country. But the people who work there, they're not even like workers in the sense of, yeah, they have 9-to-5 jobs and they go into a thing, but they are agents of the state. They are people who are actively inflicting violence on behalf of the state to people. And they often get a password because that's the lowest dregs of society. It's like no one really cares as much as they should when you are, when you hear incidences of, oh, that's someone who was violently mentally ill and they were homeless. They were like reacting to people, so that's why they were hit by a car.
And a lot of those guys don't want to be there because I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, if to be a sheriff, you have to spend a certain amount of time in prison first as a prison guard and then go up, or it's one of those things where you have to start in a prison and then move up.
I absolutely would not know exactly the details of that, but I do know it's like a stepping stone for a lot of people who want a better position. It's like another, like every job, it's relatable. Yeah. You have the aspect of it that's just like the super grindhouse of the role before you can move on to better things. But none of that's to say that is any excuse to be made for the horrible abuses that happen. Like, we've seen them on camera with police brutality happening in America, in the streets, but also just like in our prisons. Shouldn't be happening, regardless of what Kodak Black was accused of or what did. Like, you just don't treat people that way.
Going into some better news. So Her is the first black female artist to launch a Fender signature guitar. So we talked about this last week with like the booms in guitar sales and stuff and signature releases of B2B had a signature guitar enough and stuff. But Her, she launched it during she had like a video going on for the Primetime Emmys and revealed her new guitar. And it's freaking gorgeous, Stratocaster.
Yeah.
Even though I'm impartial to Telecasters, those are my favorite guitars ever, and I don't really like Stratocasters. I love it because it's this gorgeous maple fretboard, but it's this silver, like, chromatic thing throughout it. I don't know what pickups she uses in there, just the standard. If she uses, like, sensors, then she's fucking goes hard. It's gorgeous looking guitar though.
Yeah, it's almost like this translucent effect that was very popular in like the rave scene in 2019. Not to say it's like bad looking guitar, like old looking, but it kind of it's in a very subtle way reflects light.
Not enough to be like the a mirror guitar,
blinding, yeah.
Like the mirror guitar that Jimmy Page used in the 60s. Yeah. But it's enough to at least have some floof to it, and it's cool. I'm really glad that she has a signature guitar because. Oh, she makes some damn good music.
Yeah, at least, good for her. But no, at least it's not, like you said, like that guitar that affected air traffic in a 50-mile radius anytime you perform at a festival. Yeah. Last review of the week is Ohms by Deftones. It is 10 songs long, 46 minutes long, and Ohms are a kind of...
Deftones.
Yeah, I totally messed that up. Deftones are... Ohms is the album. Deftones are an... alternative metal kind of band. They've been around since the 90s, at least.
For a long time.
Later 90s, if I remember correctly, although not so correctly as to mistake the name, but you know, I'm tired. I've made a lot of stuff this week. But yeah, Deftones have been known for kind of breaking the barriers around metal music and bringing in a lot of things within that to kind of push the genre, not necessarily forward, because not a lot, like a lot of bands are following that lead, but it's pushing into its own sort of separate subset that's really cool and interesting. It's definitely, as a musical expedition, cool.
They were coming up around, like, when Smashing Pumpkins were around, too, where, like, they would bridge that gap of alternative and metal, where Smashing Pumpkins went more alternative rock route, and then Deftones went more into the metal route, where it's kind of that style in the 90s, but they still were prevalent and they still have a pretty good... Yeah. Pretty big fan base and stuff, and have decent music that's come out in the past couple of years.
Last album was Gore in 2016, so it's been a minute for sure.
Yeah,
this one I like. It's very just like distilled to the raw necessities of what you need in the album. You have a little bit of your metal flair, but it's very not metal very much. If you're not into metal and you almost like want like an intro into it, this is a very easy album to get into.
I think the second song, Ceremony, is a perfect song into it. If you're someone, because I, as a kid growing up, I mean, I listen to freaking everything. That's why we do the podcast. I liked a lot of Slayer, Metallica, Disturbed. I listened to a lot of that growing up too. Because when you work out, that's what I listen to, a lot of that stuff. And then I got into it a lot when I was younger and then broadened my horizons a lot more as you venture out and stuff, obviously, as you grow up. But I listened to a little bit of Deftones here or there as well. But I actually like this album, surprisingly, because when I saw that Deftones was on, I'm like, okay, this is going to go... I haven't listened to them in maybe almost a decade, so let's see what it sounds like. But I think Ceremony is a very, very good song where it bridges that gap again, where this one actually almost sounds a lot like Smashing Pumpkins, where it's like that the vocals are prevalent in the background, and then you have that hard rock style going into it, just big percussions in the background, lots of heavy guitar, lots of distortion to the guitar and going into it, and it's just like dystopian thing into it, but it's a pretty solid track. And again, if you don't really like hard rock or metal, you haven't listened to it much, that's a good intro song, because some of the other tracks in here are like error or just like in your face, just like boom, full gas hard rock, which is sometimes you like, because there's days where you just want to yell at the world, you're just like, fuck everything, you just get into it.
Yeah.
Sean, your white is showing. Yes, I am.
No, but like, so a lot of times my Friday commute to work is just like, or anytime I'm commuting in general sometimes.
Orange County.
Especially with music is like loud, belligerent trap music. But this time with metal, it was like a complete perfect fit. Mm-hmm. It's like the same sort of like vibe or movie you're going through is completely fit with it, which is why I like listening to metal from time to time. Although the way this album sounds is more like an alternative rock band, or definitely a rock band, but like a rock band with some alternative flair that is taking some metal
feelings
and going straight into it. I almost consider it to like early Muse for sure. Very, very early Muse. A lot of this
I could see that.
Reminiscent of it in the best ways of possible. It sounds definitely fresher and newer coming to the middle of the album where you're like in the spell of mathematics.
And then Pompeii.
Pompeji, yeah. I don't know. But yeah, both songs are like a little bit softer at times, but also like bring up to louder, heavier, harder choruses.
And then and then slow back down and stuff. Yeah. Life is
not even that much screaming, but just like sort of like passionate speaking. That's very just like, yeah, this could be any sort of alternative thing. Mm-hmm. Which is like a choice to make in it, but still definitely really good.
Yeah, I like going into the last couple songs, Headless and Ohms. I like Headless because it's just, I really like when you do this. What System of a Down has done a lot where they skip, oh my God, I can't think of it, where you hold your hands without pressing on the frets, but you just palm mute it, and you palm mute it, and then you put it up. I really like that sound. I haven't listened to that in a while. You have that effect going on to the guitars with such heavy distortion, but the vocals in there, it's prevalent, but it's not screaming at all. It's really good, clear, crisp vocals for it, and it's good.
Yeah.
And the drums are just big like ballads and stuff for the last two, and it's enjoyable.
It almost sounds like surf rock, honestly, but like really fun surf rock, like really Headless does, especially around the chorus.
I can get on. Yeah, I could see that.
Because the chorus, especially the bass line, is almost reminiscent of something Flea would do. Like it's just like the very like riding sort of bass line sort of style where you're moving upwards of a major key in the note, even though you're in the middle of a really heavy song. Like it just reads of Flea to me in that way, but of course, metaler and heavier, and it's just really good. It's a nice way to end it.
I like it. I actually really enjoyed this album a lot. I was surprised how much. So as I listened to it 1.5 times, I wanted to get into it a little bit more, just because it was my last album of the week and we had so much damn music. Yeah. Also, Fleet Foxes took up way too much of my time because I got enthralled with that album.
Fleet Foxes, but you had the most time to review.
Yeah.
It took up most of your time.
It's just one of those where it's just like, I enjoy it too much, or I was like, I'm indulging in this too much. Like, when you have a Slurpee and you actually get the extra large, and you shouldn't have got the extra large, but you're stuck with it, so you're just like drinking it off, and you got a brain freeze, but you got to finish that bitch off. Yeah.
You see, that's like, the thing is, like, I'm always very, like, disciplined with music reviews, even with music I like. I only listen to enough to review the album, and then once, not even like once I'm done recording the podcast, but once the podcast is edited and over, I'm just like done with the fucker and it's out of my life, at least that episode is, then I really start to really dig in and get into an album. It's rarely that I listen to an album, even I really like, more than 3 times, even in reviewing it, but either way, no, it's amazing. I love the way Ohms ends with the song Ohms. It's really like fantastic and energetic. It's a really nice send-off, not quiet at all. But yeah, it's just super fun. I definitely recommend this album. It's all three of these were really great this week, as I alluded to earlier. The Arbitrary Scale is NBA teams that are not as good as LeBron James at appearing in the NBA.
This is a solid Sacramento Kings.
Wow. That's very metal, honestly.
I just remember when I always got, as a kid, I always got confused because there was the LA Kings and the Sacramento Kings at the same time. And they both had the crown logo in purple. And I'm like, wait.
Yeah, that did like, throw me for a loop quite a lot.
Why is one there? One was there, that what? And then they, you know, they got oofed.
Yeah. I'm going to go with the Brooklyn Nets.
I was going to do that. So, you know, the Jason Kidd, Vince Carter days?
Absolutely. The Kidd, Jefferson
wife beater Jason Kidd days? That's the few years I did watch basketball, the early 2000s, early mid 2000s.
That was some of the, like, I don't care what any of the old heads say, that was the golden years of basketball right there.
That was the good stuff. That's when Kobe had an afro and wore number 8. That's when Shaq went into Miami and was doing the super soaker around. Yeah.
That's when, like, everybody pretended to be gangster, but no one fucked with Ron Artest.
Didn't Ron Artest run into the crowd around that time too?
Yeah, Malice in the Palace is 07. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Because he goes and just fucking people.
Because you start with like the thousands back when like the things that would get you ejected from a game were just personal fouls.
That's true.
So like that's, and back when you were playing championship basketball when people were getting like clobbered in the face and were just going, nothing.
Those are the good ones.
Those are the good old days. Let's go into the quick hits. We are always ending Audio Face in the fun note and always ending Audio Face before I run out of card space.
Oh yeah.
So Tom York is married. It's kind of a little bit of a sad story because Tom York's previous wife, they broke up, and then Tom York's previous wife died of cancer, right?
Yeah, so I think that's one of the reasons why they broke up and stuff. There's a lot into that relationship, which ended about 5-6 years ago. And he started dating Italian actress.
And by the way, just to be clear, this isn't like the new Gingrich situation where like, I'm going to cut and run, like get a hotter wife. This is more like they ended amicably, and it was more like, oh, this is end of life. This is just a really
just
weird
like,
kind of
and thing. And then for their kids and everything else, it's hard.
Yeah.
Anyways, I don't know how to pronounce her name. Diana Ronicone is probably how you say it. She's Italian. She's just Sicilian.
Roncione. Diana Roncione.
They've been together for a while. She actually was in the Anima short film that Paul Thomas Anderson directed. Because she's an actress, and when they were doing a couple of songs in there, they did one together where they're just like back and forth, and it like made me Drake upset because it was like, ooh, it hits the heartstrings. But they had a little private marriage ceremony in Sicily, and it's good to see them together and stuff.
Socially distanced with members of the Radiohead band getting together, enjoying themselves, celebrating.
Yeah.
Looks good. The photos from it look like the Engineer music video or basically anything else where Tom York looks emo and sad and black and white. Looks like a vibe. It's
just like 2020 wedding. There we go. That's what it is. Tom York all sad boy right there laying on a giant bed. Same though.
Meanwhile, the entire direct opposite of the world, Weezer and Fall Out Boy.
Two of our favorite bands.
Friends of the podcast, Weezer and Fall Out Boy, square off on Celebrity Family Feud. All it needs is the Chainsmokers, the Holy Trinity of Audio Face's favorite
bands. Oh, fuck me. Oh, that would have been beautiful. I would have recorded that shit.
Yeah, it was basically before the Emmys, so that was very interesting. I really don't care. Like, the game shows are just like cash cows for the lucky people who go in and host them. And the stressed out workers and staff who are on them. But yeah, that's a nice little music thing. This is the most substantive kind of weird one here, but basically the Doobie Brothers were upset with Bill Murray because Bill Murray was... I need to slow down a little bit with this one because this is a story.
Yes.
Bill Murray has a clothing line.
Yeah, first off, those of you who don't watch golf, Bill Murray wears the wildest random shits to pro-am golf tournaments. Like, even gays and cash just took it back. Oh, dear God, please cover up, honey.
Appropriating gay Sean is a very funny thing. Bill Murray has his own golf apparel brand, and that's why he's, like, dressed very flamboyantly. And this always reminds me
of... He wears two fucking gloves! Who wears two gloves when you golf? Mismatched colors. Anyways.
Probably O.J. Simpson. And that's what we call a callback. But this also reminds me of the Coke, the failed Coke son, like one of the Coke grandsons who designs those really ridiculous shirts. Right. Anyways, Murray was running new ads promoting the golf... shirt called Zero Hucks Given, which is a play on Huckleberry Finn, one of the actor's favorite literary characters. However, he never contacted the Doobie Brothers in their use of the song, Listen to the Music, in the ads. The Doobie Brothers were upset, and they penned a letter that I'm going to now read in full, because it's amazing. Dear Mr. Murray, we're writing on behalf of our clients, the Doobie Brothers, this is their lawyers, naturally, who perform and record the song Listen to the Music, which Tom Johnson of the Doobie Brothers wrote. It's a fine song. I know you agree because you keep using it in your ads for the Zero Hucks Given golf shirts. However, given that you haven't paid to use it, maybe you should change your name to Zero Bucks Given. We understand that you're running other ads using music from one other of our clients. It seems like the only person who uses our client's music without permission more than you do is Donald Trump. This is part of this is the part where I'm supposed to cite the United States Copyright Act, excoriate you for not complying with some subparagraph that I'm too lazy to look up, and threaten you with eternal damnation for doing so. But you already earned that with those Garfield movies. And you already know that you can't use the music in ads without paying for it. We'd almost be okay with the shirts weren't so goddamn ugly. But it is what it is. So in the immortal words of Jean-Paul Sartre, au revoir, golfer, et paes. Imagine getting absolutely ethered by Peter T. Paterno of King Holmes and Paterno LLP.
Oh my god, that is the best season assist letter ever in my like I've ever read in my life. Where he's like, I'm supposed to cite this, but I'm too fucking lazy, so you know the drill.
Yeah, it's like,
but your shirts are so ugly.
It's like, I'm supposed to cite this, but like, what the fuck are we doing
here? Like, it's the funniest shit ever. Oh, and Bill Murray has a response.
Bill Murray's lawyer.
Oh, no. I did not see this.
I told you this episode was almost a No Chill Island.
I did not see this. Oh, fuck. It should have been No Chill Island. I would have gone off.
So, here's the response, which I will unfortunately be reading in full. I should have done the vocal preparations for this. Our firm represents WM Golf Inc., a.k.a. William Murray Golf. First, I'd like to compliment you on finding levity in the law at a time when this world and this country certainly could use a laugh. Your client's demand was able to cut through the noise the news cycle and remind us how much we all miss live music these days. We would also like to confirm that both our film and the good folks at William Murray Golf are indeed fans of the Doobie Brothers music, which is why we take appreciation to your firm's choice of taking to the streets rather than to the courts, which are already overburdened by minute by minute with real problems. Mm-hmm. And now he's just like quoting songs by the Doobie Brothers. I'm sure that Howard King of your firm, who argued that the song Blurred Lines of Robin Thicke, Pharrell Williams, and T.I. fame.
That's T.I.
did not infringe on Marvin Gaye's composition, Gotta Give It Up. Would agree that your client was not harmed under these circumstances.
Did he just like straight Vanilla Ice to award him?
Oh shit. Yo, this is, okay. The term legal jujitsu is overused.
This is legal jujitsu.
Woo! All that to say, so I'll just back up and also just say here, he's saying that, oh, well, you tried this other case over here where apparently there weren't that major damages caused from this case, and this is something that you argued at your firm. So what's up here?
What's up with that?
Continuing. All that to say, your negative comments about their fashionableness are especially disconcerting to all of us, especially considering 75% of my wardrobe consists of William Murray polos, shorts, and pants. That's really rough. Call me biased, but the consensus on this side of the table is that Bill and the brothers have some of the most clever and creative lifestyle wear available that anyone pays me for. Sorry I added that part. Because he's like his lawyer, of course he's gonna say this shit. In the immortal words of Mr. Murray, another set of words that probably cost a lot of money. The more relaxed you are, the better you are at everything. So let's pour one up and unwind and listen to one of the recently released Quadio box set and plan to cross paths at a Doobie Brothers 50th anniversary show in 2021 when some level of normalcy resumes. As your client so aptly stated in this classic song in question, quote, what the people need is a way to make them smile. Which both Bill and the Doobies have been doing for decades as world-class entertainers. Please provide us with the shirt size for yourself, Tom Johnson, Patrick Simmons, Michael McDonald, John McPhee, along with which of our clients' shirts you find the least offensive, and we will happily upgrade your wardrobes and hopefully win each of you over as new fans of the brand. At least that's quote, what this fool believes. So, I mean, like, it's a nice reply.
It's hilarious.
I think the original case, like, stands more, and it's a larger thing to be talked about how in music, a lot of art, like, a lot of people just steal artists' music. And
oh, I mean, you can see that. I mean, you can see it on shirts and stuff all the time, and having lyrics on shirts, other things. So it's interesting to see what, like, legal ramifications should that be, or what. We never really got into deep conversation within that on royalties and other things of putting people's music onto merchandise that that is not sold by a band, per
se. Yeah, that's really difficult. I remember at a previous job that there was an issue with putting people's likenesses on shirts because, like, they're not consenting to that. And there's a difference between public figures and not. Mm-hmm. But even then, there's some public figures. If you were rich and, like, your likeness, like, was popular and famous, as it will be soon, Sean, just give us some time. Wouldn't you want to make some money off of that shirt? I'm sure, like, you wouldn't care if there's some homies down in Santa Fe Springs at the car wash with, like, these Sean shirts.
You know, but, like, I really,
at a certain point, you want a little bit of that paper.
Tiny bit, not much.
Yeah, so it's within the right to do that.
If they're at the Del Amo swap meet, you know, sitting out of their 2004 Chevy Tahoes and, like, putting up Sean shirts, like, oh, that's fine, you can get your check.
Absolutely not. Like, I'm not gonna cut on your $7, homie. Right. That's fine.
That's like getting high on your own supply.
But, like, once Target and, like, Walmart start doing, like, Sean, there's no words there shirts or whatever that, like, they take some phrase that isn't even yours and have your face on it. That's gonna be.
Everybody says my face is very memeable, including my girlfriend. So apparently it's a thing.
I mean, this show is a testament to that your face is very memeable, yes. So I guess so.
Speaking of memeable faces,
No! No! We always like to end audio face in a fun note, and Aaron Carter has joined Cam Soda. Cam Soda is like three steps down from OnlyFans.
If you're in Cam Soda, that means you're like down in the dirty, dirty. Like, you got a check mark on your Pornhub account.
Never mind, I'm not going to dig myself into that hole. The former child, this is an incredible sentence. I'm going to credit Alex Young from Consequence of Sound for
the writing. Yeah, I'm actually going to read.
The former child pop star has been a regular presence on the adult film site Cam Soda since joining earlier this month. That is the sentence of 2020.
Well, wasn't it, he had, like, a restraining order by Nick Carter, because then he had, like, these whole mental health episodes.
Oh, shit, you're right.
And stuff, and, yeah, there it is. So last year, Carter's hit the restraining order by his older brother, Nick Carter, and his brother cited increasingly alarming behavior, which included alleged threats of violence towards Nick's family, and a judge subsequently ordered Aaron to surrender his cache of 500 guns. Yummy. After concluding that he was mentally unfit to possess them, and apparently he's been diagnosed with personality disorder, schizophrenia, manic depression, and acute anxiety, and he's on Cam Soda. That's rough.
Not too different from, like, everyone else who are on all of these platforms. Yeah, mental illness, but, like, no, it's just, like, it's difficult for Aaron Carter, who's obviously going through some difficult times, of course, it's rough in the streets, dog. It's really rough.
I'm just not gonna. I'm gonna rebuke myself.
I'm just gonna say Zach and Cody aren't doing this. I'm just gonna put it out there.
It's rough.
Zach and Cody are fine.
This has been Audio Face.
This has been Audio Face. Good Lord. What does it mean to play us out? And, like I said, I didn't emphasize this enough, but make sure you're subscribed to Audio Face so you don't miss out anything we are going to put out in the next couple of months. There's a lot of music, even if there's music that doesn't come out, we have a lot of stuff we can review at any moment that we can just dig into. Also, check out our sister podcast, Power Report. There's going to be a ton of great stuff happening there. Mm-hmm. Maybe even some live streams if I can get my equipment working right. So almost certainly no live streams, but it'll be fun regardless. And yeah, just make sure you're following. Go to powerreport.world for all of that stuff. It's really great. Sean can be found on Twitter, Instagram, at SW Suarez. I can be found on Twitter, Dan from the Web, and on Instagram, at Dan from the Internet. The entire show can be found on Twitter and Instagram, at AudioFacePod. And we will see you next week with more music and
more and more funds.
Potentially YG.
Count it up.
Stay dangerous. Cheers.
Bye.